Is writing your novels a pleasure or a drudgery?
Pleasure and agony while composing the book in my mind. Harrowing irritation when struggling with my tools and viscera, the pencil that needs resharpening, the card that has to be rewritten, the bladder that has to be drained, the word that I always misspell and always have to look up. Then the labor of reading the typescript prepared by a secretary, the correction of my major mistakes and her minor ones, transferring corrections to other copies, misplacing pages, trying to remember something that had to be crossed out or inserted, repeating the process when proofreading, unpacking the radiant, beautiful, plump advance copy, opening it and discovering a stupid oversight committed by me, allowed by me to survive. After a month or so, I get used to the book's final stage, to its having been weaned from my brain. I now regard it with a kind of amused tenderness, as a man regards not his son, but rather the young wife of his son.
Does the aristocrat in you despise the fictionist?
Pushkin, professional poet and Russian nobleman, he used to shock the beau monde by declaring that he wrote for his own pleasure, but published for the sake of money. I do likewise, but have never shocked anybody. Except perhaps a former publisher of mine who used to counter my indignant requests by saying that I'm much too good a writer to need extravagant advances.
Why do you dislike writers who, as you put it, go in for soul-searching in print? Surely you do the same thing yourself, although at one remove behind a sort of thicket hedge of art.
Yes, if you're alluding to Dostoevsky's worst novels, then indeed I dislike intensely the Karamazov brothers and the ghastly crime and punishment rigmarole. No, I do not object to soul-searching and self-revelation, but in those books, the soul and the sins and the sentimentality and the journalese hardly warrant the tedious and muddled search.
Surely great writers have often had strong political or sociological preferences showing in their work. Tolstoy was certainly one. Does the fact that he's got those sort of things in his books make you think any the less of him?
I go by books, not by authors. I consider Anna Karenina the supreme masterpiece of 19th century literature. It is closely followed by the death of Ivan Ilyich. But I detest Resurrection. I detest the Kreutzer Sonata. Tolstoy's publicistic forays are unreadable. War and Peace, though a little too long, is a rollicking historical novel written for that morphic and limp creature known as the general reader, and more specifically for the young. In terms of artistic structure, it does not satisfy me. I derive no pleasure from its cumbersome message, from the didactic interludes, from the artificial coincidences with cool, handsome Prince Andrei turning up to witness this or that historical moment, this or that footnote in the sources used often uncritically by the author.
You refer in your autobiography to your father's study, teaching you to read and recognize authentic poetry. Do you think that there are any authentic poets alive today? And if so, who are they?
I used to have a veritable passion for poetry, English, Russian, and French. That passion started to dwindle around 1940, when I stopped gorging myself on contemporary verse. I know as little about today's poetry as about new music.
Do you think too many people are writing novels?
No, I don't think so. I read quite a number of them every year. Some are quite good, but for some odd reason, what authors and publishers keep sending me is the pseudo-picaresque stuff full of cliché characters and the enlarged pores of dirty words.
You say that you don't care what the critics write about you and your work, yet you got very angry with Edmund Wilson once for commenting on your work, and you let off some very heavy field guns at him, not to say multiple rockets. So you must have cared.
I never retaliate when my works of art are concerned. Here the arrows of adverse criticism cannot scratch, let alone pierce, the shield of what disappointed archers call my self-assurance. But I do reach for my heaviest dictionary when my scholarship is questioned, as was the case with my old friend Edmund Wilson. And I do get annoyed when people whom I've never met impinge on my privacy with false and vulgar assumptions. As, for example, Mr. Updike, when, in an otherwise clever article, absurdly suggests that my fictional character, bitchy and lewd Ada, is, I quote, in a dimension or two, Nabokov's wife.
Could you say how important your wife has been to you as a collaborator in your work?
No, I could not.
Is it true in your experience that a first love affair is unmatchable?
I might have said that when I was 16.
You've written of yourself as, I quote, looking out from my present ridge of remote, isolated, almost uninhabited time. Why uninhabited?
Well, for the same reason that a desert island is a more deserving island than one with a footprint initialing its beach. Moreover, uninhabited makes direct sense here, since most of my former companions are gone.
As you recall a patch of time, its shapes, its sounds, its colours, and the occupants of it, does this complete picture help to combat time or to offer any clue to its mysteries, or is it simply a pleasure that it affords you?
Well, let me quote from memory, more or less, a paragraph in my book, Ada. Physiologically, the sense of time is a sense of continuous becoming. Philosophically, on the other hand, time is but memory in the making. In every individual life, there goes on from cradle to deathbed the gradual shaping and strengthening of that backbone of consciousness, which is the time of the strong. Now, this is Van speaking, Van Veen, the charming villain of my book. I have not decided yet if I agree with him in all his views on the texture of time. I suspect I don't.
Have you ever experienced hallucinations or heard voices or seen things? And if so, have these visions been illuminating?
I don't know if they were illuminating, but it is quite true that when about to fall asleep after a good deal of writing and reading, when my eyes are tired and excited, I often enjoy, if that's the right word, what some drug addicts experience, a continuous series of extraordinarily bright, fluidly changing pictures. Their type is different nightly, but on a given night it remains the same. One night it may be a banal kaleidoscope of endlessly recombined and reshaped stained window designs. Next time comes a subhuman or superhuman face with a formidable growing blue eye. Or, and this is the most striking type, I see in realistic detail a long dead friend slowly turning towards me and melting into another remembered figure against the black velvet of my eyelid's inner side. As to voices, I have described in Speak Memory the snatches of strange telephone talk which now and then vibrate in my pillowed ear. Reports on those enigmatic phenomena can be found in the case histories collected by psychiatrists, but no satisfying interpretation has come my way. Freudians, keep out, please.